This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's September the 28th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company Manager. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all the day's agricultural news. And along the way, we'll hear from Mike Gray. He's the Interim Assistant Dean of Ag and Natural Resources at the University of Illinois. He has a view of the future of IPM, Integrated Pest Management, and that'll set us up for the second half hour of this hour-long edition of the Closing Market Report, when we'll talk with the Chief Technology Officer from Monsanto. His name is Rob Fraley. He's looking forward to taking your phone calls. Be ready. I'll give you the numbers in a moment so that you can start thinking about those sorts of questions you might have for Monsanto. That all comes up in this hour-long edition on a Friday for the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December contract and the soft red winter wheat pit gained 6 cents, $9.39, the settlement price. March at 9:47, up 10.5, and the May at 8:52.5, up 11.5 for the day. December corn 3.73, down 13.75, the March at 3.89.25, down 13, and the May contract 3.99.25, down 12. December corn next year at 4.19.5, down 4.75. November beans, $9.91.25, 17.75 the loss. January down 16.75 at $10.08.5, and the March contract at 10.18.25, down 15.5. November next year, $9.64, a dime lower. October bean meal at 276.30, down 6.50. December bean meal at 282, down 6.80. December bean oil at $40, even 35 lower. The nearby October contract there at 39.49, down 19. Mercantile exchange numbers. October live cattle, 96.95, a nickel higher. December down 40 at 99.80. Nearby feeders at 116.30 for the October, 80 higher. November following suit, it was up 80 as well at 116. 62.5 for the Nove feeder cattle. Lean hogs now. October contract, 58.90. The settlement price unchanged. December's at 62.25, down 27.5 for the afternoon. Outside markets, nearby November crude oil, $81.60 a barrel, $1.28. The loss, the CRB at 333.66, down 3.05. And the Dow at 13.897 is down just about 16 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, and go through the numbers from the USDA. A couple of different releases today. We'll start with this morning's release, the USDA numbers for the quarterly grain stocks report. Mike Zuzolo at 1.304 billion bushels for corn. September are the soybeans at 573 million and the wheat at 1.717. The guesses were 146 for the corn, 553 for the beans, and wheat at 1.833. What'd you make of those when you first saw them this morning?
Well, I think probably the biggest thing we were watching for, Todd, was whether the bigger numbers for both corn and beans could be offset by the outside markets and offset by a pretty friendly wheat number. And, you know, I think the market overall played the price action right down the center of the stocks report, right down center field. And maybe that tells us that for corn and beans in particular, that the gold and wheat counter support, you know, didn't counter this because folks had a desire to take profit on ideas that maybe this is time to go ahead and call a high here for the short term. The key thing now for beans was the technical support. It held in both beans and meal. And that is going to be key, and that's probably the one that dictates overall whether you want to say this is it for now in the corn and bean complexes. And I think it was really important to watch the dollar throughout the trading day because it's just been in a free fall all day long, and you've started to see the stock market go lower now on reports that they're worried about the dollar. You've started to see the crude oil fall $1.40 now in overnight or electronic trade on unleaded gas falling, again, based upon ideas that the dollar is hurting us now. So we're kind of at a tipping point now where the dollar free-falling is really not good for anybody, and it also, you know, supports the idea that whatever good you get off the export market on a weaker dollar, investors are not going to like it. And so it's kind of a trade-off here at this point and something that really kind of puts us on high alert. We take it up a notch now next week based upon this week's trade and the fact that we've got 30-year highs in the euro and all-time lows in the dollar against major currencies, and we're now at 750 gold. So these are times where you keep going down in the dollar market. You got to start wondering whether the Federal Reserve and the other central banks aren't going to start bringing in some type of coordinated intervention to support the dollar, or you just see the investor market say, this is getting too bad here.
What are the tech sides that you're looking at that farmers should be watching on the soybean? What's the numbers?
Well, really, the 10-day and the trend line are right below today's lows. You know, if you would go below the 980 level, today's low being 985.5, if you go below the 980 level on a closing basis and you would see that coordinated with the dollar moving lower, I think the big thing would be that, and then the other thing would be the wheat market. It's going to be real interesting to see. The wheat didn't really finish that great today near the low end of the range for the day. If the corn and beans continue lower next week, it's going to be interesting to see if the wheat can hang on to gains or whether it's going to be pressured along with the corn and beans. And that will tell us a lot, too, especially if we have more headaches in the dollar. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get through in our conversation right now, I'm not doing a very good job of it, is we are really concerned about the dollar at this point free-falling any more than it already has. The numbers today, they were bad as far as corn and beans go. They add 165 million bushels, theoretically, to the corn carryover. They'll add 15 to 20 million bushels to the bean carryover. There's people in Chicago that are probably going to say, hey, give me a 2-bushel yield increase in corn next month, and all of a sudden we're trading almost a 2-billion-bushel carryover. All those things are accurate. All those things are negative, but in the type of demand market we've had, I think we can contain those. Doesn't mean we won't correct, but I think we can contain those types of negative fundamentals. It's these outside market fundamentals that are really starting to concern us.
I had a farmer tell me that his thought on the analysis, and maybe I just looking to see what you think about this, is that should the wheat actually fall top and begin to fall fairly quickly, that he didn't believe corn or soybeans could manage to hang on to the gains that they have made. And I'm not so certain that he didn't believe that they couldn't go through the bottoms that they've already made, too. What do you make of all of that?
It'd be hard to go through the bottoms at this stage because you're kind of on an automatic path of very good exports the next 2 to 3 months in both corn, beans, and wheat because of the damage the dollar does. It'll take you out 3 to 6 months. It's a lot like interest rates. Whatever it does today, it'll impact our markets probably for at least another 3 months. But as far as his general conception that if you go down in the wheat and you top in the wheat, I think he's got a good point because this last rally ever since the Federal Reserve and what we put down a marker on September 12th after the report and then just ahead of the Federal Reserve, it seemed like everybody's eyes turned away from the USDA and turned over to the financial markets. And whatever gains we've made since the 12th of September, those are on the table if the wheat decides to peak, because it's been one of the best things going out there to keep these gains in the corn and beans going. And I think it goes back to the harvest data. You know, corn ended down for the week on a continuation here, and yet beans held on to about a 12-cent gain. Well, that probably is because the yield data that we continue to hear about out in the fields, and even the Iowa guys are starting to call us now and say, we've got about through about a third of our beans. Not real happy. We're getting mid-40s to low-50s, nothing like we wanted, probably hit by, you know, the dry weather that they experienced out there, too. So beans maybe could hold on a little bit to more of their gains than the corn if the wheat decided to top, I guess is how I'd say it.
Okay, Mike, one final thing. The Hogs and Pigs report was out, 103, 101, and 103 on the all hogs kept for breeding and kept for marketing. Those were all within the range. Anything that you see there that farmers should be wary of?
High all hogs and pigs hopefully would be offset by the strong marketings number, Todd. So I think year-to-date, when we went back and looked at 12/29/06 closing in lead month hogs, we're down about $3 from the beginning of this year. So we're hoping that's been factored in. Goes back to the same thing we talked about earlier in the grains. Let's see how the market treats us in the first couple days, and then we'll make a determination whether to hedge again.
Thanks much.
Thank you, Todd.
Yep, you too. That's Mike Zuzlo with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Agricultural programs are made possible with support from Cargill, featuring ProPricing Grain Contracts, a marketing program providing a variety of contracts designed to fit a farmer's performance goals and risk tolerance. Information on the web at CargillProPricing.com.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the ag weather forecast. Don't forget, Rob Fraley will be with us as well. You can call in with your questions for him. He's the Chief Technology Officer at Monsanto. Dave Dickey's here now with the news.
In agricultural news, the on-again, off-again Senate Farm Bill Committee markup appears to be off again. Sources in Washington say that Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin continues to struggle with finding enough additional money to satisfy the wants and needs of a majority of the Senate. Congress takes a week-long recess beginning next Friday. If the Senate Agriculture Committee does not mark up the farm bill by then, staffers will use the week off to continue to search for elusive additional funds. Yesterday, Harkin released a list of changes to the farm bill that includes cutting direct payments by $4.5 billion over 5 years and a new $5 billion permanent disaster aid program. In all, Harkin's proposal calls for increased spending in all programs by over $18 billion over 5 years. Acting USDA Secretary Chuck Conner says Congress needs to pass the pending free trade agreement with Peru.
It would send a troubling signal if something that is so positive and so beneficial for American agriculture could not get through the Congress. We remain very confident that it will, and I think the test votes as well as the real vote in the Ways and Means and Finance Committee demonstrate that our message is getting out there, and we just need to continue to plug away on this.
Thursday, Conner was at the National Press Club, aligning himself with the Ag Coalition for U.S.-Peru Trade. Also there, American Farm Bureau Federation President Bob Stallman.
Our own analysis shows that the benefits to agriculture are about $705 million worth of additional exports in the case of the Peru agreement, $690 million in the case of the Colombia agreement, and $195 million, those smaller, still important dollars, in the Panama agreement. In these markets, U.S. agriculture faces an average tariff of 18 to 30%. And while we face these significantly high tariffs in Peru, Colombia, and Panama, 99% of the agricultural products from those countries come into the U.S. duty-free.
Stallman stresses the U.S. is losing potential Latin America export share to Canada, Mexico, Argentina, and Chile. The International Grains Council raised its forecast for 2007-2008 global grain output to 1.655 billion metric tons, up 2.2 million tons from last month's projection. The increase was due to a significant upward revision to the global corn projection of 10.3 million tons, offset by lower projections for wheat and barley. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Now we'll take time to hear from Mike Gray. You know, the introduction of corn hybrids with more than one genetic modification has caused agricultural scientists to reconsider a long-held belief in integrated pest management. It is a way of producing crops, as you already know, that uses many different management techniques. Today we'll hear some of the musings on the subject from Mike Gray. Gray is the interim assistant dean of the Ag and Natural Resources area for University of Illinois. And along with extension entomologist Kevin Steff, he contributes articles on insect pests of crops in the state of Illinois to an online pest management bulletin. Now here's Mike on the future of IPM.
Where did this IPM strategy come from, and what are some similarities in terms of where we've been in terms and where we're at now, because things have so significantly changed that there are A lot of people like myself, my counterparts in the U.S. that are seriously questioning the long-term durability, the relevance of IPM is in a traditional vantage point in the commercial corn and soybean sector. In fact, I'm going up in November to speak at Madison. They want me, University of Wisconsin, they want me to come up and address this very topic based on some of the newsletter articles that Kevin and I have written. You know, where does IPM even fit into this if producers aren't scouting, if they're not using thresholds, and all of a sudden if we've got particularly with where things seem to be going in the next couple of years, where you've got, you know, hybrids out there with eight different, you know, transgenes in them that take care of your entire lepidopteran complex, your corn rootworm, and all of a sudden you begin to think, what is it that a producer needs to go out and even scout for and consider the use of thresholds? So farmers are making and will increasingly make their pest management decisions in the fall as they purchase seed. And, you know, the I in IPM, the integration, I mean, historically has meant let's potentially consider altering our planting dates. Let's consider altering our harvest dates. Let's consider planting a diversity of different germplasm. Let's diversify our modes of action in terms of insecticides or herbicides. Let's consider tillage, perhaps, for certain pests. Let's consider crop rotation. Well, if you look at what's going on, there's this tremendous surge, obviously, towards continuous corn, driven in part by this interest in the biofuels, ethanol. So we're seeing the drive towards continuous corn. We see very little variation, actually, in planting date. I mean, this state is planted, you know, in a really amazingly short, you know, 2 to 3 week period. Look at what's going on in terms of harvesting. I mean, they're fall plowing along Monticello Road. I mean, it's, here we are. Okay, it's end of September. A relatively narrow spectrum of germplasm in many cases. Single mode of action herbicide, or maybe a couple at best, across over 90% of the soybean acres. So the integration is just not out there as much as it has been historically. And certainly producers are not scouting and using thresholds as often as they once did. There are some exceptions, obviously. I think they still do a pretty decent job of, say, scouting for soybean aphids and, you know, using thresholds to manage that insect. So there are some exceptions. But in corn, things are rapidly changing. And the relationship between the commercial sector and our land grant, with more and more companies bringing new technology into the marketplace at a point where maybe researchers in our land grants have had very little exposure to some of these new technologies, where they've not necessarily gone out and tested them in their plots, like back in the 70s and 80s when it was more common for a lot of the land grants to look at some of these experimental insecticides for 6-7 years before they were commercialized. That doesn't happen anymore. So a lot has changed. A lot will continue to change. But certainly, I mean, when we look ahead, perhaps integration in the future means integrating genes that are in these transgenic plants. So all of a sudden you've got not a single mode of action against a rootworm or corn borer, but now maybe you've got two different proteins in that plant or three different proteins in that plant that are all aimed at, say, corn rootworm or at corn borer, so that if one gene that's responsible for the production of a given protein doesn't take out the corn rootworm, you've got sort of a backup, some other genes that'll take and go in and take out rootworm. So you're really throwing a lot, you're all at once, at the rootworm or at the corn borer. And I guess then you get into interesting discussions regarding, do you need a refuge? And if you don't, I mean, clearly we are placing massive selection pressure on these insects. And my guess is, and nobody knows, I mean, you can run simulation models and do the math And I suspect that a lot of these technologies will take us well into the future before resistance develops, but we don't know. You may see companies say, well, you know, we've got a whole suite of different genes and novel proteins coming, and if resistance does flare up 5 years from now or 7 years from now, we intend to introduce these new proteins in and take care of that. So, and producers believe that, you know, I mean, they really believe that, well, you know, if resistance does develop, there will be new products. Industry has always delivered on that promise. The academics, the ecologists, the people that study, you know, population ecology, sure, they're going to be more cautious, more leery about where this is all headed.
That was University of Illinois Interim Assistant Dean for Ag and Natural Resources, Mike Gray, with his view on the future of integrated pest management. Pretty good primer for the second half of our program today, when we'll talk with Rob Fraley, who is the Chief Technology Officer for Monsanto. He's expecting your calls. I hope you have your fingers ready. There are a couple of numbers you can dial. They're 217-333-9455 or 800-222-9455. More on those numbers later.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
It's a Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Marker Report. This is an hour-long extended edition. Rob Fraley will join us at about 36 after the hour, so you've got some time before we get to him. If you've got questions for Rob Fraley, Chief Technology Officer at Monsanto, please get ready to dial in and talk to him. Right now on the line with us is Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevators, 7 elevators across the eastern part of Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about harvest season there in your area.
It is rolling right along. As we talked about, we're probably a little heavier on bean harvest than areas to the south and west of us. Getting going into corn through yesterday, we're probably in the 50-60% done on soybeans right now. Corn probably just moved ahead of 25% yesterday.
And how's the basis holding up in the push of that corn?
Actually, it's improved a little bit here over the last week or so. Gulf numbers have come up a little bit on corn. Beans have been real choppy all over the place. One of the big factors on corn is that freight costs have moderated a little bit as we're moving on through harvest. Barge freight traded at 600% of tariff here, say, yesterday. That's about 78 cents a bushel from, say, Havana to New Orleans. It got as high as $1.13 earlier in the month. And as barge freight goes down, the cost of rail cars has come down a little bit. Trains find some wood to knock on here, but have been rolling pretty well so far.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are at $3.38 on nearby corn, $9.42 on soybeans.
We appreciate you being with us this afternoon.
Thank you.
And that is Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevators, 7 elevators in East Central Illinois. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg will be with us. After that, we'll talk with Rob Fraley of Monsanto. And in the meantime, we'll hear what's been happening in the world of regional news. I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The previous year of fundraising at the University of Illinois brought in more than $190 million. The U of I Foundation says about $136 million of that went to the foundation, with another $54 million going to the university itself. The foundation says alumni giving went up about 9% over the previous fiscal year. The organization also says its long-term Brilliant Futures Fund drive has passed the halfway point, with more than $1.16 billion committed. That campaign launched in 2003 and lasts until 2011. Authorities now confirm that a body found behind several vacant businesses in a South Chicago suburb this week is that of an Eli Lilly sales representative who was reported missing 9 days ago. Chicago Police spokeswoman Monique Bond says dental records and an autopsy were used to identify 28-year-old Naila Franklin, who was reported missing September 19th after she didn't show up for a work meeting. The woman's body was discovered yesterday, not far from where her car was found abandoned in Hammond, Indiana, last week. Franklin's disappearance triggered a frantic search, with family members and volunteers papering the city with flyers, taking out a newspaper ad seeking the public's help, and launching a website. Illinois immigration activists say they don't endorse a new citizenship test announced yesterday by federal officials, saying it's another obstacle for those seeking naturalization. Citizenship and Immigration Services have released the pool of 100 civics and history questions. The Indiana Horse Racing Commission is putting stricter regulations on the use of steroids for horses competing at the state's horse tracks. Commission member Doug Grimes says adoption of the rule doesn't make steroids illegal but simply regulates their use. It limits the concentration of certain anabolic steroids in horses on days that they race. Few other states regulate steroids in racehorses. Opponents of the new rule say it will make it difficult for Indiana horses to race in other states. The new rule takes effect with the new racing season next year. It's the end of the line for a building that was for decades the home of Urbana's Mercy Hospital. It's now the west wing of Provena Covenant Hospital. Today, the hospital says it plans to tear down the Mercy building by the end of the year and replace it with green space and a parking lot. The building was mainly office space for decades, but it held 50 hospital beds when it first opened in the 1920s. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is WILL Urbana. It is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. On the line now with us to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey. Hi, Steve. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about what looks like a really good weekend forecast.
Yeah, the weekend will be really nice. Stay with sunny skies and slightly warmer weather. You know, this time of year, we should be seeing high temperatures generally around the upper 60s in far northern Illinois to maybe the upper 70s in the far south. So almost everywhere will be running above that over the weekend and into next week, and we'll get into a strong southerly flow next week. So temperatures will probably be running about 10 degrees above normal, which will put them in the upper 70s, maybe even low 80s at times, as we stay in that flow most of the week. But it looks like it could be the last really good stretch of warm weather for a while once next week gets by.
And then if you look around the rest of the Midwest, what do we see?
Generally pretty good. I think the only problems with completing field work might be up in northern Illinois, up through parts of Iowa, Wisconsin, maybe Michigan, where some showers will be more likely, especially later this weekend and early next week. There will be a weak front coming through, and looks like most of the energy with that will be north. We could see some showers down in central and southern Illinois and Indiana, but in general, I think the biggest threat's up north, and even at that, it's not that big of a threat. So conditions for finishing harvest or continuing harvest should be very good for the next 5 to 7 days.
Anything across the planet that you've been watching that we should be aware of?
Well, just looks like maybe we could get our first good cold outbreak here maybe next weekend, about another 7 to 10 days. It looks like that's been holding up on the model run, so we'll keep an eye on that. That's still way out there, and there's still some tropical activity which could throw a monkey wrench in the works, so we'll be watching that over the next week or so as well.
Thanks much. We appreciate you being with us.
Okay, Todd.
That's Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center here at the Illinois State Water Survey on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. In just a moment, Rob Fraley will join us from Monsanto. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on WILL Urbana. I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from the Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta now offers a private dining room for parties, meetings, and other events. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff of the Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
I'm Celeste Quinn, host of the Afternoon Magazine. Set your alarm for the Power Hour, 7 a.m., Thursday, October 11th.
Entering our second half hour for the Closing Market Report on WILL. This half hour, as we've been doing all week, a special interview. On the line with us from St. Louis this afternoon is Rob Fraley. Good afternoon to you, Mr. Fraley. Thank you for taking your time today.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. How are you doing?
I'm very well. You are the Chief Technology Officer for Monsanto. Is that the correct title?
Yes, I am.
Tell me what that means in general.
Well, that means that I'm responsible for managing Monsanto's research and development, which includes our breeding, our biotechnology, and all of our work to develop those products for the marketplace.
Man, I must get one final thing in here before we really get into some of the Monsanto products and questions we have for you. Your alma mater is?
Well, I think you probably know I spent from 1971 to 1978 on the Urbana campus. So I'm a U of I graduate, and I grew up on a small farm just outside of Hoopston, Illinois. So it's always good to be back, and I'll be watching the score of that football game, and I hope it's going to be a good one here on Saturday.
You betcha. Cheer for the Orange. Thanks much on that one, and we do appreciate the fact that you are a graduate of the University of Illinois. So let's talk about what Monsanto has been up to, and maybe we should start with the Dow AgriSciences Smart Stacks Agreement, what it means for the future of genetically modified crops from both of the companies.
Well, we're really excited. As you well know, we've had some great luck with the corn traits, and our current triple stack is a very, very popular trait combination in corn this season. But with this Dow agreement and our work on our new Smart Stacks product, we're going to have 8 genes in that corn plant to provide even better protection against corn borers and the caterpillar complex and against rootworms. So we'll bring the best of all technologies together in that bag of seed. Hopefully that'll be just right around the end of the decade.
Around the end of the decade, and you will be sharing germplasm with Dow AgriSciences as well?
Yeah, we have a relationship that will allow for some germplasm exchange, as well as for stacking the various components of that Smart Stack, which would include the Monsanto YieldGuard VT rootworm, and then our new next generation VT Pro for caterpillar, and along with the Herculex rootworm and the Herculex 1 caterpillar gene.
If our listeners have questions, they can call in to talk with Rob Fraley this afternoon, the Chief Technology Officer at Monsanto. A couple of numbers. You can call locally at 217-333-9455. That's 333-9455. Or if you're outside of the area and you'd like to dial in toll-free, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 222-9455. And it is a toll-free 800 number. One more question, and then we have a lot of folks that are waiting. Tell me about this nitrogen-fixing deal that was announced earlier this week by Monsanto as well. There's a gene that you've been working on and one that you're looking to have a cooperative agreement with.
Well, we've been working in this area of drought tolerance, nitrogen utilization for many years, and we've we're starting to see several exciting products in our field tests coming through the pipeline. But I think you're referring to a collaboration that we announced this week with a company called Evigen, and they have a set of genes for enhancing nitrogen utilization. And just to be clear for everybody out there, these aren't genes that would fix nitrogen like you're familiar with a soybean plant, but these are genes that, as we've tested them, enable the corn plant to use nitrogen more effectively, either to increase the yield of that's possible with the corn plant, or perhaps to lower nitrogen use rates.
Okay, so I had that wrong, but thank you very much for the correction. Our phone lines have lit up, so we don't have any open at the moment. If you keep calling, eventually you'll be able to get through. Let's go to Rob. Are you ready to take a few questions?
You bet I am.
All right, so we'll go to line 4 now, and I believe she's calling from Wellington here in Illinois. Good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us. You have a question for Rob Fraley?
Yeah, a couple of them. They're kind of co-related. Yesterday morning, Colleen Callahan on WGFA was talking about your joint venture with, is it Austin Western, regarding if people plant YieldGuard triple stack exclusively except for their refuge areas, well, then they could get a break on their crop insurance. I presume this is federal crop.
Sure. Let me, Wellington, Illinois,
that.
You know, that's where I went to high school.
Right. Yeah,
so
my husband.
What was your name again? I just wanted to catch it.
My name?
Yeah.
My husband's name is Ross Butzo.
Oh, sure. Yeah, used to live not too far away from you guys. So what the announcement was a, and it's really, I think, really exciting, that if a grower is planting 75% to 80% of their corn as the triple stack, the Monsanto triple stack technology, they will get a break on federal or the crop insurance that could be anywhere in the range of around 15% to 20%. And I think what it really shows is that this technology reduces farmer risk. And of course, we've seen that with the triple stack in terms of providing higher yields and drought protection because of those strong roots and strong stems. And it's nice to see the insurance agencies recognizing that and passing that benefit on to the grower. I kind of like to think about it. It's a little bit like a good driver program. If you're using technology that that gives you a benefit and you're doing something different and better, then you get rewarded for that.
What I wanted to ask was, is this just a private joint venture, or is this a federal crop insurance program?
Well, the risk management agency that we're testing this with will make it available broadly. Right now, we're going to be trialing it next. We hope to be trialing it in the 2008 season in four states, and that would include Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana.
Rob, we have a question now from a caller right here in Champaign, is a consumer. Good afternoon to you. I have a question for Rob Braley.
Yes, thank you. I'm a consumer, and it sounds wonderful, all these new innovations you're going to put in a seed, but what does it do to nutritionally to the consumption when you eat these things that have been grown that way?
Great question, and I think that's really for me one of the really important parts of biotechnology is, we've been using now soybeans and corn with these new biotech traits, for now over 10 years, and they're thoroughly studied by all the regulatory agencies and thoroughly tested. And what we've seen in those 10 years is that the corn and soybeans perform exceptionally well for the grower, and that they have excellent benefits to the consumer. In fact, some of the next generation biotechnology products that will soon be developing, that you might be really interested in, are soybeans, where we've been able to change the oil composition to reduce trans fats and saturated fats and produce a healthy oil. In fact, at our Farm Progress show just outside of Decatur a couple weeks ago, we showed some of these, what we call our Vistiv 3 soybeans, and there was a lot of excitement because these soybeans are going to produce a much healthier oil, and literally that Vistiv 3 oil will be a lot like olive oil in terms of the health and nutrition benefits that it can deliver. So we're excited about the first set of products that have reached the marketplace and their safety and performance record, and these next generation traits are going to provide some really important benefits to consumers for the long run. Thanks for your question.
Listeners, if you'd like to ask a question to Rob Fraley, the CTO, Chief Technology Officer at Monsanto, you can do that. Give us a call at 217-333-9455 locally. That's 333-9455 or 800 toll free 222-9455. On line 3 from Will County, Illinois, a farmer calls in this afternoon. Are you on the combine today?
Yes, I am. How are you today?
I'm very good. You have a question for Rob Fraley?
Yeah, I'd like to ask, well, kind of a goofy question. I'd like to ask who's responsible for this perfect weather, and I'd like to say thank you for that.
Well, that's Ed Kieser.
Okay. Yes, a question on the combination of the rootworm traits. Are you going to combine the Herculex rootworm along with the YieldGuard rootworm trait?
Yeah, that's our plan. And, you know, in general, what we'll see in the benefits of those combinations will be, even broader spectrum of control and obviously a lot of flexibility to use Roundup Liberty Link combinations. The other, area that we're going to be working with the government on is to be able to lower the refuge requirements, and that could be an important additional benefit of that smart stack combination.
So you wouldn't have to be required for the, or you're, at least you're thinking now, you wouldn't be required for the 20% refuge.
That's what we have to work with the agencies, particularly the EPA, to obtain that approval. But we've been able to use a very similar approach in cotton, and there we've been able to see a refuge reduction, from 20% to 5%, and we think that the science, will work that same way in corn, and will give us the ability to see a refuge reduction, and that's not a guarantee, but it's something we're working for, and we believe will be possible with these stacked traits.
Excellent. Yeah, because I'm seeing almost where the refuges are now, there's almost more pressure than there used to be. That or this rootworm is getting even more aggressive than it used to be.
Well, I think it's probably, the rootworm is clearly, adopting very quickly to, feeding on soybean roots and some of the ability to have that extended diapause. So, what's nice, I think, is that, here's an example where the science and the product development is giving us, second and third generation technologies for rootworm control in the seed that are going to keep up with the pest.
Do you feel that the YieldGuard rootworm gene is as good as the Herculex? Or because you see a lot of university trials and other trials, and it's almost saying that maybe one of them is a little bit better than the other. What are your studies showing?
Well, the genes are very similar and actually use some common technology. I think both genes perform exceptionally well. I know this year with our YieldGuard rootworm, and now particularly with our second generation YieldGuard VT, we've had very, very strong performance, very few complaints on product performance. So it's been a very strong year for rootworm performance. And hopefully as you're harvesting that corn, you're seeing that yield benefit as well.
That farmer, of course, was calling in from Will County, and I believe probably, Rob, that he's dealing now, maybe for one of the first couple of years, with the changed or the variant form of the Western corn rootworm, which would be laying its eggs in soybeans. I do want to follow up on the refuge just a bit. Are there concerns on the ecological side for lowering the refuge when you have so many genes that would have an impact on insect populations? Might there be some backlash somewhere along the line, further up the food chain, where those insects would be in?
Well, I think that's why I indicated, first of all, we still have to do this work, but we see that as a real possible benefit of the smart stacks combination, and that's really grounded in the fact that in cotton, where we've introduced our BollGuard 2 product, which is a cotton seed that contains now two different BT genes for controlling the caterpillar complex in cotton, we've been successful in seeing a reduction of the refuge requirement. And, the reason you have the refuge is to provide, a possibility for, if an insect ever became resistant to the BT protein, that it would likely cross with a non-resistant bug, and that's the end of the story. And so it's a resistance management tool. We think we accomplish that same benefit by having multiple genes in the plant performing to also reduce that risk of resistance development. And that's where the science is leading us, and we believe would provide significant benefit to growers if we can see a reduction in refuge requirement at the same time having better technology that reduces that risk of resistance development in the future.
A farmer on the line with us from Indiana this afternoon. Good afternoon to you. You have a question for Mr. Fraley?
Yes, I do, and it goes along with what we were just discussing on the refuge. We've done the sticky traps and all that for the last 2-3 years, and we are not finding the soybean variant in our area and not seeing a big yield boost from the genetically modified trait edition down here. So isn't it prudent on integrated pest management philosophy that we hold off for a while before we introduce the genetically modified corn in our area? Plus, we also have a pretty good Ohio River market on non-GMO corn.
How far south in Indiana are you?
We're between Indianapolis and the Ohio River.
Okay, thank you much. An answer, Rob?
Well, my recommendation would be to try some of the product on your farm. And, what I always tell growers is, you know your fields, you know your situation better than anyone else. What we've seen has been a pretty rapid and extensive adoption, of the rootworm technology. And, it's now being planted on, far more acres than were ever treated with a rootworm insecticide. And the reason, is basically that, growers are seeing that the rootworm technology, and particularly the triple stack, drives yield even when, pressures were thought to be low and not necessarily requiring a chemical treatment. They're driving yield. So I think the thing to do would be to try it on your farm and see if you get the kind of yield benefit that makes it economically a good decision to plant the triple technology.
Okay. Well, to be fair, about a third of my crop is triple stack, and it's still out there.
All right.
So we'll know a lot more in 2 weeks than we know now.
Let's see what the combine says.
Exactly.
But in general, what we're seeing across the across the Corn Belt is that growers are certainly seeing that economic benefit, and that's been really driven the adoption of the technology.
By the way, we've been talking with farmers the last couple of days. You've probably been listening about what their yields are like. I did not get somebody from the southern part of Indiana. How are things in your area?
We're running around 165 average.
And that compares to what would be normal.
That was exactly what I figured on in March when I laid out my plan.
All right, thank you much.
Good for you.
Incredible. We had 4 inches of rain in July that a lot of neighbors didn't get. I can go 2 miles west, and the guys are getting crop insurance. We were very fortunate.
We appreciate you being with us this afternoon and calling in to talk with Rob Fraley. If you've got a question, still have a few minutes left. You can call in and talk to him this afternoon. The numbers to call are 217-333-9455 locally or 800-222-9455. We have a caller from Champaign on line number one who's been waiting very patiently. Good afternoon to you.
Hello.
Yes.
I had a question. I apologize if this has already been asked, but I'd heard that a competitor had come up with a soybean that allowed for a yield up to as high as incredibly 160-odd acres, 160 bushels per acre, and that on average they got over 100 per acre. Is that really where the technology is going generally? Is that what we could look forward to in the coming years? That type of increase in yields?
Well, I think in both corn and soybean, we're going to see significant opportunity for yield increases. And it's really a combination of some of the biotechnology traits, you know, like the triple stack that we were just talking about, that provides for yield boost, and particularly helps under heavy pest and under drought conditions. But also, we're seeing tremendous advances in the base breeding technology, and that's allowing plant breeders to produce better and unique combinations that are driving yield. So I think we're going to see, above trend line yield increases going forward, and that's clearly something we think is going to be important, because we all know that the demand for our grains around the world for food, feed, and fuel markets is significant, and I think it's an exciting time for all of us in agriculture to have both the demand, for our products, as well as exciting breakthroughs in technology that can drive yield.
And we'll move quickly. We're closing in on 3.5 minutes, and I've got full lines. Line number 2 from Monticello, Indiana. Quick question for Rob Fraley.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I have a question on your herbicide-tolerant genes on corn on corn. How do you propose we handle the volunteer corn issue with Roundup Ready corn?
Good question. I get that a lot, and I think it obviously your situation, and usually there's some compounding situations with down corn or some harvest issues that can magnify volunteer on corn after corn. What we really recommend is that cultivation is always an option. There are some other herbicide combinations, but we've done a lot of studies to show that unless you've got a really significant volunteer population, that the impact on yield is pretty slight, because volunteer corn is not really a terribly aggressive weed. So, I understand some of the cosmetic issues. Usually, the impact on yield is pretty slight, and so I think what you really have to look at is what's the overall cost of your weed control program, and what's the benefits of a Roundup Ready system. And generally, it pencils out better to continue to use the Roundup Ready system. But thanks for the question. It's a tough problem, and fully aware of it.
2.5 minutes left. We have 3 phone calls. Let's see how we can do. Farmer on line 3 from Grundy County. Your question very quickly, please.
Yes. Any developmental money being spent toward fungal infections, primarily stalk rot? Triple stacks taking care of my bug problems, but this year I've got a lot of stalk rot. Any work in that area?
Great question, and it's an important one. And obviously, as I was driving through Illinois this year, I saw a lot of folks spraying Headline, and that's certainly one of the products that we have a co-marketing program with BASF with on some of our. On some of our Roundup Ready Rewards programs. But to the heart of your question, we're doing a lot of work both on the breeding and on the biotech front to develop better disease resistance packages, and that's an area where I think you'll see improvement in the future, particularly from some of the breeding advances. Good question. Thanks.
And finally, a question from a farmer in Potsdam. We've got a minute and a half. I've got 40 seconds that I have to fill with underwrite. So your question, please, from Potsdam.
Yes, I want to know if what Monsanto's done on research as far as the biomass crops go.
Good question, and it's really an important area. So one of the first things we're looking at is to keep increasing the yields of corn, because I think corn, increasing those yields can produce a lot more grain for both feed and for fuel applications. There's an opportunity clearly to use some of the stalks and stover components in a cellulosic program as well. But beyond that, we believe that some of the perennial grasses, some of the other sugar producing crops will make sense to look at, and we're starting research programs in those areas. Thanks.
We've been visiting with Rob Fraley of Monsanto Company. I'm Todd Gleason. This is WILL Urbana.
Radio Maria Restaurant in downtown Champaign, now serving tapas every afternoon and evening until 2 a.m., along with their regular dinner and brunch menus and hours. Radio Maria has a wide selection of spirits and wine, including 35 wines by the glass and 27 draft beers. More information is available at RadioMariaRestaurant.com. WILL programming is made possible by the Center for Advanced Study, whose Millercom 2008 series presents Anti-Semitism in Poland After Auschwitz by Jan Gross on Tuesday, October 9th at 7:30 p.m. at the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus. More information is available online at cas.uiuc.edu.